You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, September 12th, 2017. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live. Steps by from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Irma cleanup begins. Houston floodwaters are incredibly toxic. Trump's ACA destruction continues unabashed. But it's a big week for single payer. Sanders' Medicare for All drops tomorrow. And will every 2020 Democratic presidential hopeful support single payer? Meanwhile, the Republicans' election integrity assault begins anew in New Hampshire today. And Trump seems to be building a moat. Jared may be on the outside. UN agrees to the toughest ever North Korean sanctions. And if you want to make a Trump supporter mad about housing assistance, studies show that you can show them a picture of a black guy. Another reason why elections matter, appellate court judges. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. We are slimmed down. We are lean and mean today. It's just Matt and I. Michael is, as you know, Kelly has, well, she's now remote. I mean, she hasn't totally left the show. Well, maybe I shouldn't say that because I think she's sort of, there's a little bit of moonlighting going on. She has another gig. She's left the show, except for occasionally for some stuff. And Michael's traveled to, where is he, in Chicago?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Chicago.
Oh, are we supposed to keep that under wraps?
No, I think if I was more sure about it, I would say.
I guess he really didn't listen when he must have told you where he was going.
It's Chicago.
Yes, Michael's speaking at, well, he's gone to some type of like trade show, right?
Yes, him and Phil. It's Two Dope Boys related.
Two Dope Boys. They've come up with a new product, like some type of tchotchkes that they're pushing, right? Like those squeezy dice.
Audio Trend Report, actually.
What?
It's on it's augmented reality, virtual reality, and another one. I can't remember the third. Virtual reality.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's right.
So there's a extensive cleanup going on now, obviously, down in Florida. 12 million, I've seen reports of up to 12 million people have lost power, maybe closer to 10. I don't know. That power hopefully is starting to come back a little bit. And Houston, in the wake of the flooding there, and of course, there are islands in the Caribbean completely destroyed. And I think, you know, it's possible we are a day or two away from some really horrific or disastrous situations there as people are lacking food and clean water. And of course, depending on the countries there. There's the U.S. Virgin Islands. There's, I think, the British Virgin Islands. The French. So there's just a tremendous amount of difficulty amongst, you know, some of those Caribbean islands. Some parts of Florida, it appears that they dodged a bullet, or at the very least, you know, maybe dodged a bullet, ended up getting hit with a baseball bat better than getting shot with a bullet, I guess. And we'll talk about the what's going on in Houston, apparently. New York Times checked out two different Houston neighborhoods, and the bacteria and toxins that, as a function of sewer overflow, like in people's houses, is off the charts. So be very careful if you're heading back into those areas. I mean, I don't know how many people who have been driven out of, let's say, Houston have time to listen to podcasts at this point, but really devastating. And listen to, you know, this is Donald Trump's, or I should say the Homeland Security Advisor, Tom Bossert, right? And he's responding to a question from CNN's Jim Acosta about climate change. Now, on one hand, I can understand the idea that, like, okay, we have a narrow portfolio. We're dealing with that right now. But the idea that seeing a window into our future, like we have seen over the past 2 or 3 weeks with the flooding in Houston, and the devastation in the state of Florida, we're basically getting a glimpse into our future. And I'm frankly, I don't know if it's one that we can mitigate, or not, but you know, I spoke to Michael Mann on the Ring of Fire last week, and he said, look, you know, this is going to be something where when we talk about these 1 in 500 year storms, 1 in 100 year storms, we could be talking a 1 in 2 year storm where the frequency of these things start happening exponentially faster. And so the idea that we wouldn't contemplate what's causing it is sort of shocking. I get there's a portfolio, but here is Homeland Security Advisor Tom Bossert answering a question about climate change in the light of what we've experienced in this country for the past 3 or 4 weeks.
Bossert, the previous administration saw a connection between climate change and Homeland Security, and that the frequency and intensity of powerful storms like Harvey and Irma could pose a problem for future administrations. You could have FEMA budgets that can't keep up with the demand when you have powerful storms hitting the country. Is that something that you think this administration should take a look at? We know the president pulled out of the Paris Climate Accord. Are these storms giving this administration some pause when it comes to the issue of climate change and Homeland Security?
I was here in the 2004 cycle of hurricanes 4 and 6 weeks that hit Florida. I think what's prudent for us right now is to make sure that those response capabilities are there. Causality is something outside of my ability to analyze right now. I will tell you that we continue to take seriously the climate change, not the cause of it, but the things that we observe. And so there's rising floodwaters, I think 1 inch every 10 years in Tampa, things that would require prudent mitigation measures. And what I said from the podium the other day and what President Trump remains committed to is making sure that federal dollars aren't used to rebuild things that will be in harm's way later or that won't be hardened against the future predictable floods that we see. And that has to do with engineering analysis and changing conditions along eroding shorelines, but also in inland water and flood control projects. So
what he's saying there is that, well, we're going to react to things that we observe. We see rising sea levels, we're going to not build that, you know, we're not going to help rebuild in an area that may be in jeopardy, but we're going to pretend like it was the sun god that did this. Or we're just going to say this, we're not even going to go that far into label it like that it was God. It just happens. It's just happening. I mean, this is just absurd. This is absurd policy. We would never do this anywhere. We don't go around. We have agencies. I mean, the fire department sends out regulators and says, hey, you know, there's an obvious fire problem here. Matt would say this is like the 1800s.
Or like this. I think 1666 was a London fire, as if they're just like, let's just continue building roofs with straw and cooking with fat.
Hello, what's this now? I want to go and encourage people to have an open flame in their home. The thatch roofs. Who knows? We just respond to what happens. don't think about what the connection is between the fire and the thatch roof. Just look at the embers and say, hey, maybe we should extend the ceilings a little bit higher.
It's an extension of Trump. That's how he responds to any real life situation. Just respond in the moment, and the larger context doesn't matter.
I don't understand how the guy can stand up there, right? And just with a straight face say, like, we're just going to things show up. We're going to react in that way. We're not going to even contemplate the cause of these things. Just is what it is. Department of Homeland, it is what it is. That's just crazy. Folks, so much news. It can be hard to keep up with all of the political stories and perspectives. I've talked about it before, but that's why I love Texture. I like to read a lot of different magazines. I like to read my long forms. But I am not going to pay, with all due respect, $8 per magazine subscription at this point. Texture lets me read trusted sources of news and also keeps me from getting too, you know, I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole. So with Texture, I can read a story from The New Yorker, I can read then a story from Rolling Stone, and then I can read a story from Family Handyman. I mean, they're not really stories. There are some of them stories.
That would make you an extreme polymath in like 1875.
Really? Is that all I need?
Carpentry and publications? I think so.
Boom! Renaissance, man. Sometimes I'll read Wired, too. All this on my Texture. Right there. I mean, the savings is enormous and the convenience is amazing. Plus, I see a story like, oh, make a backyard shed. I mean, I don't know if it's a story. It's like instructions. It's sort of a story. It's like, I wanted to, it always starts off with the same thing with that. It's always like, I was looking outside and I was thinking, God, I wish I had a shed. And I thought, why don't I do it myself? But the beauty is, like, I don't necessarily have the time to read it at that moment. I can star it, basically create my own magazine. Plus, thanks to Texture's daily recommendations, exclusive interactive features, you can easily pinpoint articles that you want to read. Texture is searchable. You can, like I say, you can mark what you like and dig it up again. Everything from National Geographic, Fast Company, Rolling Stone, available for way less than the Texture app, which was selected as one of Apple's top 2016 iPad apps. It's normally $9.99 a month, but if you sign up right now at texture.com/majority, you get a 14-day trial for free. That's 14 days. Try Texture for free when you go to texture.com/majority, texture.com/majority. Also, you know, when you're talking about making the most of your time, getting the most information. What do you do? What can you do in 15 minutes? I mean, Matt, I know you could do it in 15 minutes.
Listen to about 45 minutes of audiobook.
There you go. A lot of people, 15 minutes on Facebook, online shopping for something. Instead, why not get a summary of a book's main points that you've been meaning to read by listening to key insights in just 15 minutes? One of the things that they say, like, ask people, have you ever read 4 books in one day? Nobody does that. Well, Matt does. But now you can get to know what you need from a nonfiction book in just 15 minutes. Introducing Blinkist. It's an app. It has over 2,000 of the best-selling nonfiction books transformed into powerful packs you can read or listen to in just 15 minutes. You're listening to this podcast, so you love the idea of learning on the go with your smartphone. Imagine if you could listen to the key insights of a nonfiction book in just 15 minutes. Their team of experts is constantly curating and adding new titles from best of lists, so you're always getting the most powerful ideas distilled so you can hear them in just 15 minutes or less or made for mobile format. Barbara Arden writes, Nickel and Dimed is out. on Blinkist. That's something that I'm going to, like, you know, I read that years ago. And I'm just going to refresh myself with it. That there's that Matthew Desmond evicted. We've been trying to book him on the show. We can't get him on. So now maybe instead of, like, buying the book, and I'm going to go and just get the 15 minutes from that. Boom. Plus, there's things like, you know, like Tim Ferriss's, like, 4-hour work week. I'm not going to read that whole book. I'm going to practice what he preaches. I'm going to read him 15 minutes. I'll listen to it. Right now, Blinkist has a special offer just for Majority Report listeners. Go to Blinkist.com/majority right now. Start your free trial or get 3 months off your yearly plan when you join today. Wow. That's Blinkist. Spelled Blink, B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/majority to start your free trial or get your 3 months off your yearly plan. Blinkist.com/majority. Do you realize, Matt, how many books you could read? Because you can speed them up.
Yeah, 15 minutes. You could technically do that in 5.
That 4-hour work week. I'm going to try and do that. That's what I want to do. I want to have a 4-hour work week. Seriously. I'll tell you something. If I had a 4-hour work week and you mix that with stamps.com, I would never have to do anything, I feel like. I would never have to leave.
It should be the fight for 4 hours.
Come into the office for 4 hours and then go home. I don't know how that 4-hour work week works, but with stamps.com, you can avoid the hassle of going to the post office. You can avoid the hassle of actually just leaving your office. Mail everything from postcards to envelopes to packages, domestic or international, with stamps.com. It lets you buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and printer. You click print, mail, and you're done. Stamps.com never closes. So you want to get work done at 3 in the morning? You can print postage or for letters or packages 24/7. Plus, they send you a digital scale that automatically calculates the exact postage and help you decide the best class of mail for your needs. You can get discounts at the post office itself, too. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. Right now, you too can enjoy Stamps.com with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Just go to Stamps.com. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage. Type in the Majority Report. No, just Majority Report. You don't have to do the. We should have established that very early on. I never did.
That's a common problem with bands, too. Arcade Fire has that issue.
Really?
Is it the Arcade Fire or Arcade Fire?
Oh, man. Well, I'm glad to know those guys going through the same thing I am. Stamps.com, enter code Majority Report. Stamps.com, never leave your home or office again. All right, I want to dig in. There's two things happening in terms of Medicare, or I should say medicine in this country. One is that the Trump administration continues its assault on the Affordable Care Act. Now, let me back up for a minute. Lindsey Graham seems convinced that his plan is going to pass. He's got 18 days to get this passed. I don't think it's going to happen. But I would have to wait and see. I'm a little bit nervous about it. But hopefully, no. You know, Mitch McConnell today was out crowing in the New York Times that the debt ceiling deal is not as good as people make. And his big argument was, you know, with mechanisms that we have to extend the country's borrowing power, the debt ceiling may not come up in 3 months. It may not come up for 6 months, which means he's going to be able to decouple the debt ceiling from the budget votes, and it's going to lessen Democrats' leverage. And when that guy starts squawking about stuff, it always makes me nervous. Not necessarily about what he squawks about, but just like he can't help himself. Preen so much that the only thing he could do is like pretend that he's squawking about one thing when in fact he's squawking about something else. Nevertheless, I don't know what's going to happen with that Graham legislation. But in the meantime, Donald Trump, his administration, seems to be hell-bent on, and this is even as in the Senate, the HELP Committee, Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions, are holding hearings to find out what insurance companies are requesting to strengthen Obamacare exchanges. We are 2 weeks out at this moment from insurance companies finalizing their decisions about whether or not they're going to sell in any specific exchange. And then in November, open enrollment will begin. It lasts for only 6 weeks now. I believe it's been shortened by the Trump administration. Insurers basically just want, I guess, like two or three major things. One, stop threatening to cut off the subsidies because we can't plan. The only thing that insurance companies are is basically just a bunch of individuals sitting in a room trying to work out the statistical likelihood that they'll have to pay out on claims. And balancing that against how much money is going to be coming in. That's what insurance is. And if they don't know how much money will be coming in, because they don't know if the subsidies are going to be there, then they can't function. They want an extension of a reinsurance program that basically backs up the insurance companies. These are basically the risk corridors, because again, this is so new, they don't have the ability to calculate those actuarial tables in a way that they feel confident about. And they want the individual mandate to be continue to be enforced so that the whole system works. That's it. While they are about to testify in front of a Republican-chaired committee in the Senate, the Trump administration, which said that it was going to have, cut it by 41%, the Navigator program. The Navigator program is basically a way, basically the help desk of Obamacare exchanges. That's the best way to look at it. They were community groups that get funding, pre-existing community groups that got funding. They would hire people on, and they would do outreach to people living between 133% and 400% of poverty in states that had expanded Medicaid from 100%, and I guess maybe even the states that didn't have expanded Medicaid, to help them navigate the exchanges. Over time, they become less and less important because people get it, but you still need this type of assistance. Trump administration said it's going to cut that budget by 40%. But here's the thing. They haven't paid out any of it. Not only have they not cut the budget yet, the $63 million that are supposed to go out to the program has lapsed. They're just simply not sending the checks or responding to letters about grants. So all of these organizations are wondering if they have any type of funding flow, and they're starting to cut people, lay people off with the hopes that when we get the funding, because they all assume eventually they have to get the funding. I don't know why they even assume that. They're hoping they're going to be able to hire these people back, but they're not going to be able to. I mean, this is part of the wholesale destruction of our governmental apparatus. But you're 50 days out from the open enrollment period, and if you don't have people helping people enroll, you're going to shrink these roles in Obamacare, and you're going to exacerbate the problem that insurers have. They're going to leave, and thus you're going to try and push and promote this death cycle, basically, the death spiral, as they call it. So all of this is going on in the Trump administration. And on the flip side of this, tomorrow afternoon at about 2:30 p.m., is my understanding, Bernie Sanders is going to announce and introduce, I guess, his Medicare for All bill. I imagine it's going to be quite detailed at that time. There are now, by my count, I think there are six now confirmed co-sponsors of this bill. They include Senator Cory Booker.
Surprise, surprise.
Kirsten Gillibrand, I believe, is going to announce her co-sponsorship. Senator Jeff Merkley, who's been there for a long time. Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris. And I think that's it. That's five. Oh, and Brian Schatz. And so that's six. There may be more. But this is very significant, because if there's something that just strikes you about the names Cory Booker, Kirsten Gillibrand, Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, it's because they're just about everyone in the Senate, and almost all in the Senate, I think. I can think of one more off the top of my head. One or two more who may be running for president in 2020 as a Democrat. Don't know the details yet of this bill, but it's interesting what's going on here, because there are two other bills that do not make the mistake of believing that they are necessarily in competition with these other bills. It is the Sanders is going to release the Medicare for All Act of 2017. In the meantime, you've got two other bills. One is, like I say, Brian Schatz from Hawaii. He has another bill. Now, he has signed on to co-sponsor Sanders' bill. And I think Sanders is actually going to co-sponsor his bill as well. So the idea is they're going to what they're doing, it seems to me, is they're defining the parameters of the debate. And they're not just defining the outside parameters, right? The reach. They're going to define the sort of like the slam dunk parameters, so that it can't be, there's going to be no room for a, hey, let's just, I don't know, hyper enhance the Affordable Care Act. There's both, I don't even want to say idealism. There's both aspiration here and pragmatism across the board. So Schatz's bill would open up, or would basically give states, I guess, the option of opening up their Medicaid programs to anyone who wants to buy into Medicaid. That's, I guess, to people who are uninsured. It would maintain Medicaid for low-income Americans. But if you are too high income to qualify to pay a premium to in the exchanges, right, where you don't get a subsidy, you can join the program. You could use the subsidies if you are qualified under an Obamacare exchange. You could use those subsidies to buy into the Medicaid program. So it's you think of it as a public option on the exchanges, but expanded. And here's the thing. It would also raise reimbursement rates from Medicaid reimbursement rates to Medicare reimbursement rates. And it does all this without massive tax increases or even substantial tax increases. It doesn't, you keep your insurance, that type of stuff. And he's basically put it out there. He says, I don't see it as in competition to Bernie Sanders' plan. It is an interim step on the way to Bernie Sanders' plan. He's signed on to it. It's an interesting dynamic we're starting to see develop there. And now Chris Murphy is also going to be putting out a plan. He is one of those names that stuck out in my head who's also going to be running, I think, in 2020. Maybe not, but I have a feeling it will be. And that is to let any individual and business buy into Medicare as part of the exchange. And I think there's some crossover in terms of the Schatz plan, but it allows basically businesses to go buy into Medicare and offer that to their employees. I haven't seen it really drawn out, but that's the broad strokes of it. He claims that he may ultimately sign on to Sanders' single-payer bill. And I would imagine by then he will. But what they're doing is they're basically just saying, like, you know, we're shutting the barn door. And this is the lowest bar we're going to allow if you're going to be in this conversation. So basically it's a Medicare for all buy-in. Now, it's not, is it Medicare? I mean, you know, no, because it's, you got to purchase it. But it is putting everybody in the same bucket. It's basically introducing the plan to people. Obviously, it would be much cheaper. Eight other Democrats, led by Debbie Stabenow of Michigan last month, proposed to let individuals 55 and older opt for Medicare buy-in. So, I mean, the bottom line is all of these folks, and I should say Sherrod Brown has declined to co-sponsor Bernie Sanders' bill and instead has opted to support Schatz's bill. What you're looking at is somebody who is running in a tight race in 2018, and it's a fascinating dynamic. I mean, I think to a certain extent, what's happening is, and I think this is the way that it works with big funders, because I don't know that there would be a problem with people in Ohio if he signed on to Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All bill. I mean, I think to a certain extent, it is a way of trying to avoid big funders running against him in Ohio, putting money against him in Ohio, where he basically is just saying, I'm going to sign on to the minimum allowable within the Democratic Party. Now, this is a guy in the past who has supported single payer. But the thing to keep in mind here is that Cory Booker can sign on to this, co-sponsor, and it doesn't mean anything. But it does raise the stakes for him not to run on it. I mean, look at the value of Bernie Sanders running on single payer. Regardless of who won the election, by June of last year, it became a much more possible and popular policy than it was. Well, significantly more so than it was 2 years earlier. Max Baucus, the guy who was the biggest roadblock probably to things like the public option to things like a Medicare, a buy-in. I mean, certainly there were others. But Max Baucus chaired the Senate Finance Committee that drew up a lot of the provisions of the Affordable Care Act. And he has now come out. According to the Bozeman Daily Chronicle, which I read on a regular basis, former Montana Senator Max Baucus, my personal view is we've got to start looking at single payer. I think we should have hearings. We're getting there. It's going to happen. Obviously, Baucus can't do anything anymore, but he refused to hold a single hearing on single payer back when he was the guy who could hold those hearings. It's pretty crazy. How far we have moved. And I don't think that's just a function. I think that's a function of what was happening during the Obama years. I think it's a function of what Bernie Sanders meant. Do I think Trump has contributed to it? Perhaps. But the idea that this many Democratic senators perceive this as a winning position to take, even if it's just preening, even if it's just lip service, the idea that they can't afford not to pay lip service to it is a positive. Because, look, nothing's going to happen now anyways. Nothing's going to happen until the Democrats take control of the House and the Senate. And then nothing's going to happen anyways. But if they're going to run on this, if they're going to be, Schatz says he doesn't think single payer should be a litmus test because he doesn't think we can get there right away, and that's why he's offering this other bill. But, the proof is in not just the pudding, but also sort of like the smell of the pudding as it starts to cook pudding. Maybe not so much of a pudding, but like a flan. It's in the flan. You cook a flan. My point is you smell a cooking. You get a good sense of whether or not what's cooking is good. So I don't know. This is very encouraging. We'll know more about this bill tomorrow. But the idea that you can't be taken seriously as a Democratic nominee in 2020 unless you are actively promoting single payer is a very encouraging idea. It's certainly not even remotely close to anything that I've experienced in my lifetime. Not even remotely close. So pretty exciting. I want to touch on this election integrity committee, too, in New Hampshire, because this is also really important. And we'll go into the fun half. What this committee is about, it's the Chris Kobach Committee. He is the voter and disenfranchiser-in-chief from Kansas. And Trump set up the Election Integrity Committee. Supposedly, it was about to address Trump's being convinced that there were 3 to 4 million undocumented immigrants who voted in the last, 3 or 4 million fake votes. But this is an idea, and this has been a policy of the Republican Party for years to disenfranchise people from voting, and this is what they're going to do, and this is why it's so important. This is, again, just an information war, basically. The committee is going to attempt to whitewash all of these fake theories and bunk numbers to promote some type of policy that's going to inhibit people's ability to vote. Here is Ann Coulter. Maybe we haven't even talked about it on the show. There was a Pence aide, and There are people in, I mean, Chris Kobach, I think, wrote in Breitbart about this, that there were something like 5,000 people who voted in New Hampshire without a New Hampshire license. And it turns out that that's probably true because it's not illegal to vote in New Hampshire with an out-of-state license. I'd be surprised if it was only 5,000 people, because you can do that as a college student. You can do it if you've recently moved to New Hampshire from another state. It's perfectly legal. Many of those people, Washington Post, Dave Weigel, went up there on behest of the CIA to interview students there. And said it took him about like literally 15 minutes on Twitter to find and confirm 4 or 5 students, I think it was. But here's Ann Coulter coming in with the next round of it, right? Okay, well, it may be the case that it's okay for people to vote without a license there. And so that's what explains that. But we should really address that problem in and of itself.
The, I think, cleverer response, though doesn't persuade me. In fact, it makes me enraged for a completely separate reason, was in the Washington Post claiming, no, this is all college students. Well, okay.
Yeah, what does
college
it mean? Yeah.
Students shouldn't be voting in states where they don't live. They're not going to change their driver's license. They're not going to change their car registration. I mean, these are the sorts of things that can be overlooked. And by the way, you have 6 months to do it. The commission looked back to see, have they done it, nearly a year later, and they still hadn't changed vehicle registrations or driver's licenses. And it was more than 5,000 of them, and she won by only 1,000 votes. So even if half of them were legitimate. But no, let's get back to college students being able to vote in states where they don't live. No, that's outrageous. You're there for a few years. Did you go to school in state?
I claimed I was an in-state resident in North Carolina, but I
okay,
really,
we won't get into that.
Yeah.
But I never changed my registration.
Pause it for 1 second. So Howie Carr just announced that he had basically defrauded, North Carolina? He just defrauded North Carolina. Well, let's not worry about that. Let's just worry about the idea that you go for somewhere for 4 years. You've left home and you shouldn't be able to vote in that location. Continue on.
Resident of New York or a resident of Michigan. It's outrageous. These college kids, plus which, third outrage here, college kids shouldn't be voting. Just to get, the results of 13 years of Chinese-style brainwashing, bust them to the polls. I don't think that people should be able to vote until they're 30.
Now, look, I know Ann Coulter is just, and she's been trying to make herself more prominent again. Like, I don't know, the other day she was saying, she was, tweeting stuff about Irma not being real as a way of putting yourself back in the limelight. But this is how desperate they are. And we're going to hear that. We're going to hear that about college students. In fact, we see it multiple places around the country. La Page tried to do that. We see this where college students are disenfranchised. Now, of course, we don't even have voting on a weekend in this country. So the idea that you can get back to your state, or that you can get back to your state to get an absentee ballot. They just want to make it as hard as possible to vote.
I voted in both Minnesota and New York with a North Dakota license.
Did you really?
Yep.
You voted twice?
Well, not in the same election.
Oh. I asked that because Ann Coulter, coincidentally, had multiple registrations and was investigated, I believe, on multiple occasions for voter fraud.
Yeah, it looks like a Huffington Post article from 2010. Ann Coulter to face vote on voter fraud charges in Connecticut.
Yeah, I think they looked into that. And then I think she had some problems maybe back in 2014. I'm not even sure. But so she's just grandstanding here. But that is what one of the things that you're going to hear out of New Hampshire this weekend. I mean, I should say this week. There's going to be 4 other major fake presentations. That's according to Think Progress. And they had a computer science professor at Gustavus Adolphus College, Max Halperin, who's advised lawmakers on election-related technology and legislation, look at some of these claims. One is the claim that 8,471 people cast more than one ballot in the 2016 election. So there were 120 plus, maybe 130 million people. And supposedly, 8,500 cast more than one ballot in the 2016 election. However, this is a... Ken Block, the president of Simpatico Software Systems, is going to present to this panel a report by a conservative think tank that says that it's highly likely that 8,400 duplicate votes were cast in the 2016 election across 21 states. They did not have access to all 50 states and relied on commercial data sources to draw their conclusion. Well, the states themselves, they run checks to look for potential double voting using private voter lists, which contain far more information than published ones. So it's just a weaker version of what the states already do. And it turns out after the states look at this stuff, the vast majority of the initial flag people turn out to have no problems after all. Because there's a lot of false matches. Two people named Matt Leck. Whatever. So, I mean, it's possible out of 130 million votes cast that there's a couple of thousand duplicate ballots, I guess. Possible.
I feel like the Clintons should have been able to do better than that.
There is an unpublished study, this is my favorite, that finds that voter ID doesn't affect turnout. Now, this is done by a guy named Dr. John Lott. He also is the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, which argues and is floating the idea like we should do background checks for everybody who votes, like we do with gun ownership. This is the best part about his study. This guy Halperin, this expert in statistical analysis writes, the fact that this is something he wrote more than 10 years ago and has not been able to get any kind of peer-reviewed publication should be a red flag on that study. That's sort of like a good indication, right, that there might be a problem. You do a study about voter ID, and nobody will sign off it.
It's just a peer review establishment.
That's right. Classic peer review.
Elites.
There's going to be a claim that the number of registered voters in a jurisdiction can't exceed the voting age population. Now, contemplate this for a moment. 5,000 people in a district over the age of 18, but there are 5,200 people registered. How could that possibly be? Well, A, the number of voting age residents in a jurisdiction at any time is an estimate because people move in and out all the time. Also, jurisdictions are going to have basically non-voters in their districts because people have moved out or died. It's unbelievable that we're having to push back against stuff like this. And then, of course, there's the, you know, you'll hear the license thing, which is more of a joke. But it's important for you to have refutations of this stuff quickly, because this is why they're doing it. I can tell you that. The reason why they're doing this tour is to create a notion, a predicate for them to do something to disenfranchise voters. What they'll do, we don't know yet. But that's why it's important for you to know about it. All right, we got to take a break. We're going to head into the fun half of the program. Folks, a reminder, this program relies on your support to exist. You can become a member today by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. And, you know, we're looking to make a new hire. We're looking to upgrade the website, which I think is going to happen soon. We're going to redo the app. We're contemplating, you know, another expansion. We've, over the years, it's, you know, we've gone from sitting in a, really, I think, a place where we should have had some type of, like, those masks you use when you're cutting wood. You know, like the filter ones, the white ones. I wouldn't use a full gas mask. But into an office where we're doing a lot more. We got a couple of shows now emanating out of here. Doing more content, better video. Your support makes it all possible. You can become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. And what we do is we make it commercial free for you. So today we had three commercials. When we started this, we didn't have many ads, but now it's like becoming a benefit to become a member. You don't have to listen to ads. Plus, we give you bonus content. So if you want that bonus content and you can't afford to become a member, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Have some patience with us. We're well behind right now, but we will hook you up. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Folks, give us a review at iTunes. All right, we'll be back in a minute. 646-257-3920.